from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm David Hyde, in for Ross Reynolds. More than 40 million workers in the U.S. get fewer than 6 hours of sleep per night, according to a recent study by the Centers for Disease Control. And American students are the most sleep-deprived in the world. Joining us with answers about why this may be happening and what to do about it is Dr. Sarah Stoltz. She's medical director of the Swedish Sleep Medicine Program and medical director of the sleep centers at Cherry Hill and Northwest Hospital. Dr. Stoltz, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
So American workers are super-duper sleep-deprived, but what does it mean to say that somebody is sleep-deprived?
Well, it means that they're not getting enough sleep to be fully rested. It means that they're probably not functioning. Their brain isn't functioning as well as it could. They might make mistakes.
And how does sleep deprivation, we know it affects health, how does it affect job performance? Because there's these recent studies about workers and about students. How does it affect people's performance on the job?
Well, I'm going to first address the students so we don't overlook that. When they don't get enough sleep, they don't do as well on their exams. You know, there's a whole big debate about school start times, and they've shown that if you delay start times by 45 minutes or something like that, that you get much better performance on all those standardized tests and more learning.
And part of that has to do with the way kids sleep, right? They sleep more than older people do.
Right. There's two problems. One is that they need more sleep. An average adolescent probably needs about 9 hours, and they probably get about seven.
Mm.
And on top of it, there's a change in the timing of sleep that happens around puberty, so that the brain wants to go to sleep later. So, you know, little kids, they fall asleep early and they wake up early. They're always waking up their parents at 6 o'clock in the morning and going watching cartoons or whatever it is. When you reach puberty, your body clock delays, and then you can't fall asleep naturally so early, and maybe you want to go to sleep at 11 or 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning.
And what about screen time? It seems like that's a factor that's being written about a lot lately. Kids with cell phones, with computers in their rooms, how much of that is a factor in terms of sleep deprivation for kids?
It's actually a big factor, and it's partly just the physical stimulation of involving yourself in all these things that are so interactive close to bedtime. It's really better right before bed to be doing something that's kind of soothing and quiet. And then there's the light. So it seems like the way the light comes from all these devices is in a way that's more stimulating to the brain.
All right, so it affects kids' performance. What about the health consequences?
Well, we wonder about whether that may be feeding some of the obesity epidemic. Lack of sleep has been correlated with increased weight. If you sleep deprive a normal, healthy person, you can find that the next day they're craving more calories, and interestingly enough, they tend to crave junk food.
Dr. Sarah Stoltz is here. She's the medical director of the Swedish Sleep Medicine Program. We're talking about sleep, the latest science on sleep, and how to get more of it, or what to do if you're not getting enough. One of the things I read recently was a study looking at Alaska and saying that Alaskans have more sleep deprivation than people in other states because of the weird light conditions there, where they have the super light summers and the super dark winters. Is that something that affects us here in the Northwest, or especially in Seattle, because we're higher up?
Yeah, definitely more than, say, in San Diego. I happened to be in Alaska at this time of year a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. I mean, my energy just, like, was so much greater than down here because the light, the days were so long, and I was out hiking, and it was like, oh, it's 10 o'clock. I can keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful.
Because you really can't. So this time of year, as we get close to around the solstice, this is something that people in the Northwest might be experiencing.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's the flip side of the negative aspect of living here in the winter and how people get depressed and they need more sleep in the winter because of seasonal affective disorder. But people don't usually complain when they have more energy.
Right. How many hours of do people need a night?
That depends. So it's really individual. I was saying earlier that the adolescents are probably about 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Adults probably need 7 to 8, but there is a range. So in the clinic, we'll see people who might need 11 hours of sleep, and that's hard to get. And
that's like, you're not sick. You just need 11 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
Some people, wow.
Right. And then I remember a guy once that he only needed 5 hours of sleep, and when we cut down his time in bed, he suddenly didn't have insomnia anymore.
And over the course of the night, what does it mean to get a good night's sleep?
A good night's sleep, you know, one could write a novel about that, don't you think? It's so many things. It's having enough sleep so that you feel rested during the day, so that you're in a good mood, so that you're cognitively functioning, you can remember things, learn things. But it also means not waking up a whole lot. It means being able to fall asleep. A perfect night of sleep is where you wake up on your own and you didn't need the alarm.
So it's kind of subjective?
Somewhat, yeah.
But there are also stages, sort of scientific stages of sleep. What are those?
Yeah. So we divide sleep into two broad categories, REM and non-REM sleep. And from a sleep person's perspective, from a sleep doctor's perspective, we would add wake into that. So there's three states of man: wakefulness, REM, and non-REM sleep. And they're all very different. So most people on the street would say wake and sleep are different. But to us, there's the REM and the non-REM, and they're just as different as wake and sleep is in your mind.
Wow.
Yeah. So REM sleep, your brain is very active. You're doing some kind of cognitive processing. You're learning complex things, perhaps. We don't know all of the functions of REM sleep. At the same time, your body is paralyzed, which is fascinating to me. So if you're dreaming, you don't physically do the things that you're dreaming about. There are patients that we see who have a disorder where they don't get that paralysis, and they actually literally will do the things that they're dreaming. I mean, you see them, you know, sit up in bed and say, "So, you don't want to race, huh?" Because their body isn't getting paralyzed the way it should. So that's REM sleep. And then non-REM sleep is your brain isn't very active. Your body is movable. And then when you're awake, your brain is active and your body is movable. So they kind of have these conflicting dichotomies. The non-REM sleep we divide into three types or three stages, stage one, two, and three. And they're basically by depth. Stage one is a very light sleep. If we had you in the sleep lab and you took a nap and you went into stage one and you didn't get past that and we came and woke you up, you'd probably tell us you hadn't been asleep. It feels like just being drowsy. And it's only meant to be the process of going from wake to sleep. Stage two, I sometimes call it generic sleep. One of my colleagues called it the workhorse of sleep. It's like the biggest chunk of the night. And it's just sort of regular sleep. It's good for you. And then there's stage three, which is deep sleep. And that's not a very big proportion of the night in adults. That's the type of sleep where it's difficult to wake a person up. If you have like a toddler and they fall asleep in the car and you want to move them into the crib, they won't wake up. That's stage three.
Dr. Sarah Stolz is here. She's the medical director of the sleep program at Swedish. And so with all these different stages, I mean, are any of them better than others for helping you feel rested?
Yeah, you know, my patients are always asking me that. Well, what's the type of sleep I want?
I don't know how you'd get it, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, exactly. That's true, too. Well, you know, I know there's something wrong with me. I'm not getting into my REM sleep. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. And it doesn't work that way. So I try to explain it. It's like a diet. You know, you want to have a balanced diet. There's no one right thing to eat. It's not okay to have a diet that's only protein. It's not okay to have a diet that's only fat. So you want to have the right balance. And for example, REM sleep is only supposed to be 15 to 25% of your night. If you spent the whole night in REM sleep, it wouldn't be too good.
But if you're not getting any, that's a problem.
Well, maybe, maybe not. We don't actually know. Antidepressants reduce REM sleep, and they don't seem to decrease people's ability to function. In fact, they improve it.
We're talking about sleep with the sleep doctor, Dr. Sarah Stolz. I'm wondering, you know, you have one of those nights where you just have these crazy dreams. How does that affect the quality of the sleep that I'm having?
Yeah, I don't think that would be a very good night of sleep. So again, I get this thing from my patients, like they want to have more REM sleep, and I wonder sometimes if they're right about that. If you perceive that you've had a lot of dreams, it probably means that you were waking up a lot. It doesn't necessarily mean you had any more dreaming sleep. It's more to do with how disrupted your sleep was. So if you think that...
So remembering your dreams means you had relatively disrupted sleep, potentially.
Possibly, huh. Yeah. Or you woke up from REM sleep, which, you know, a lot of people do in the morning.
Right. Another question this morning, our producer, Arwen, was saying that sometimes she comes to work and she feels like she's half asleep. And so we were talking about whether or not half asleep is one of these stages. Is that a scientific category?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. We call that sleep drunkenness or
she's coming to work drunk, is what you're telling me.
Well, yeah, maybe. Drunk with sleep.
What is that?
Or sleep inertia. So I guess people need to think about sleep and wake as a continuum and not a dichotomy. So it's not black and white. You don't go immediately from being awake to asleep. You don't go immediately from being asleep to awake. There's a period, about an hour or more, where your brain isn't really quite where it is later in the day. So if we did reaction times on you, you wouldn't be right, you know, the way you would be later on in the day.
Are you impaired like a drunk driver would be impaired then?
On some level. I mean, if you jumped out of bed, it depends on the person, okay? But if you jumped out of bed and you're one of these people that sleeps heavily and you're kind of a night owl type that wants to sleep later in the morning, and you get up and you jump in your car, you're probably not going to be as good at avoiding the deer that jumps in front of you as somebody who's been awake for a couple of hours.
So take some time and wake up before you get in the car. Does it matter how you wake up in the morning in terms of the type of how rested you feel or how rested you actually are?
Well, you're going to feel more rested if you wake up naturally than if an alarm clock wakes you. If you're awakened from the stage three we were talking about, you can feel pretty groggy. If you come up out of stage one or REM, you know, it's going to be better. It's worth pointing out that we also wake up quite a few times during the night and don't remember it.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah. So in the sleep lab, we see that people are awake, on a normal night, 5, 10, 15 times. Every time you roll over, you're awake in our book. We would call it wakefulness based on the EEG, but you don't remember it.
So your brain is waking up, essentially. Yeah. You're becoming conscious even if you don't remember it?
Yeah. You have to be awake for more than 4 minutes to be able to record that in your memory that it actually occurred. So if it's really short, it just gets erased.
So are most people waking up constantly throughout the night or not so much?
Well, a normal sleeper is going to be awake, as I said, 5 or 10 times and have no memory of it.
And it's not affecting the quality of their sleep. It's perfectly fine.
That's normal. Yeah.
How about people who, I've read kind of the Puritans had this idea of restful wakefulness. They'd go to bed super duper early and kind of then wake up and read in the middle of the night and go back to sleep and that kind of thing. Does the duration of sleep make a difference?
Hey, it's an interesting point you bring up about, before we had Edison and the light bulb, what was sleep like? Because I think the expectation that I have from people who come to see me in the clinic is that they're supposed to sleep this light switch sort of sleep that I was talking about. Like I get in bed, I fall asleep right away, and I sleep all night, and I wake up in the morning and I go.
Like we're robots.
Yeah. But in the old days, I'm sure that people spent a lot of time in bed awake. If you went to bed with the sun and got up with the sun and it was cold in the house and you were trying to stay warm and all of that, people undoubtedly spent a lot of time awake. They probably slept longer than we do now. They probably accumulated a little more of that stage one I was talking about. That's the one thing I would say you don't need too much of that one. If you're asking me which you want, I can't tell you which is the best sleep, but the one you don't want to have is stage one. So they probably,
because that doesn't help that much.
It doesn't really. Yeah, it's just a transition. So they probably had a lot more of that and a lot more wakefulness in the night, but they didn't complain about it because they didn't have an expectation like we have now.
So if they were tired, they would be more likely to just go to sleep.
Yeah.
What about some of the things like caffeine and you mentioned earlier light deprivation, but how, you hear people say, well, I don't drink coffee afternoon, that kind of thing. I mean, how much is caffeine a factor in people experiencing sleep problems?
I think it's more of a problem than the vast majority of people drinking coffee realize. So we advise people in sleep hygiene, having good habits about your sleep, not to drink caffeine within 10 hours of when they want to go to bed, because it really can hang on for a long time. That being said, I have people tell me on a regular basis, oh, I can drink a cup of coffee and go to sleep. I don't know. Maybe they're having more awakenings and they don't realize it. It's hard to imagine that it doesn't have some impact.
And last question I had earlier, you sort of referenced the idea that there are different kinds of sleepers. There's people that are night owls and others that are likely to wake up early. We kind of know that anecdotally from our experience or talking to other people, but is that a scientific thing?
Yes, yeah. We call them chronotypes, like, time personalities. So the ones that like to get up early in the morning we call larks, and the ones that like to stay up later called owls. And it's got to do with your circadian rhythm, what time your body wants you to go to sleep. As I said, the teenagers are turning into owls, whereas, young children are larks.
And how do you figure out which you are? I mean, does it just happen automatically?
Yeah, you don't get to choose. A lot of it's genetic.
So if you're the sort of person that hates waking up in the morning, you know that you're more likely to be an owl, for example?
Right. I mean, some of it's behavioral, but if you're taken out of the situation where job or school is controlling your life and you notice, a lot of it also has to do with your mood. You think about, like, when do I feel the best? When am I the happiest? When am I able to think the most clearly? If you're an owl, you're going to be answering, I do my best thinking at 10 o'clock at night. If you're a lark, you might do your best thinking at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you'd be chipper and the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed thing. That's the lark.
Got it. All right, Dr. Sarah Stolz, thanks so much for being here. She's the medical director of the sleep medicine program at Swedish. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.